As much as I like to fight everyone, I'm having a pretty good time here. Why you mad? Why you mad? Why you mad? Why you mad?
Hey, Louisa, what's up?
Hi, Jake. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm at my parents' place in Houston.
Right. Yeah. Oh, man. It's crazy because I can't believe I didn't even bring up that we should probably talk about Austin and Texas and shit since you were there and since our guest has lived there and did comedy there. So let's start with welcome our guest, Kath Barbadoro. Kath, thank you so much for doing Why You Mad. How are you?
Hi. Thank you for having me. I've wanted to do this for a long time. So I'm very excited to be here.
I am so happy you're here. Please allow me to express my reticence in inviting people to the show because like I think especially if people don't listen to it, they think that we're just like mean, you know, and that we're just like getting mad on purpose and canceling people or some shit. And it's totally not that. So I just like I'm like, oh, I don't know, is this person gonna wanna, but I'm really glad that you did. So welcome.
Yeah. Thank you.
Is that why you book guests is to like do like damage control on our reputation? Like, no, look, we're friends with Kath.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
I don't know who that would help you with, but
no one listens.
Hopefully someone.
No, it helps me inside my brain know that like, oh, good people are still realize we're not trying to do that. We're doing another thing. Sometimes we're a little bit mad, but you
sometimes,
know.
Look, sometimes you got to go in. That's like... I know, look, a lot of podcasts, afraid to go in, not you guys.
Exactly. No, I mean, Jake and I talk about all the time, like, what are we going to lose, man? Let's just go in. Let's talk about this.
Yeah. Well, we're afraid to go out.
It's fun. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's not our brand at all. That would be not being in our lane. But that's, I'm super happy to have you guys. If Texas shit comes up, let's talk about it. But
oh, yeah.
I want to start. This is connected because we're going to get to Andrew Yang, and Andrew Yang belongs in Austin now with everything that has happened.
Whatever. Yeah, he should be running for mayor of Austin.
Exactly. Really. Yeah, exactly. But let me not skip ahead in the story because I would like to ask you guys about, you know, reopening, right? Like, we all know the pandemic is not over. People can still get sick. People are still dying. A lot of people don't have the vaccine yet. But we're fucking reopened. People are traveling. People are straight up like going to Hawaii and Jamaica and like all this shit. Indoor shows have resumed in New York City, but they're like 33% capacity, right? And one of the rules is that there has to be 12 feet between the stage, the end of the stage and the front row, which like no comedy club in New York City, except for like Gotham and Caroline's, has the space to even make that happen. Like that's impossible. None of them are following this shit. So it's for sure not safe, right? Like it's definitely not error proof in any way. And so like if you choose to do a show or to perform in shows, you're like having to weigh a lot of risks and decisions. So I guess I want to ask you guys, how do you feel about reopening? Because I've been talking to a few comics who have expressed like a lot of anxieties, not just around the I think maybe obvious COVID shit, but like re-entering friendships that you think maybe you don't want to resume, seeing people that you have seen like a whole different face of theirs politically since, and you're definitely on different sides of things, venues that you're like, I don't think I would ever step foot there again. Just like a lot of anxiety around how it's not going to be comfortable, I guess, to go back to comedy. Are either of you experiencing any of that? What's going on? What are your reopening plans?
You know what? I think a lot of people are going through right now. Mm-hmm. Remember that episode of 30 Rock where like they have a party that gets out of control and it's just like a weird montage of people screaming in mirrors and like doing coke?
Yeah.
And stuff.
They like invite people to Kenneth's house and they have like a crazy party.
Yeah. Because they think T.I. is going to show up to something or whatever.
Yeah.
And then there's just a cut to the next morning where Jack Donaghy's hair is all fucked up and they're all like looking at each other like, oh my God, what have we done? And then they just go, let's never talk about this. I think it's where a lot of people are living in like the let's reset. Let's never talk about this. But I'm not.
Yeah.
I think this is just been...
No, I will make it weird for everyone.
Yeah.
We're going to change the podcast to make it weird. Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm the same because my major trauma or revelation, trauma is probably too strong a word, but over this pandemic thing was that, you know, before the pandemic, I was so focused, you guys, on like, I don't know, being an anthropologist. So I like try to know every sect in comedy, you know, and like know the type of comedy each of these groups did, know them, go see their shows, see the things they produce, try to judge them equally as comics, you know what I mean? And in my quest to like be respectful and objective and all of this shit, I then like realized like a bunch of these fucking assholes think that I agree with them. They like, they think that I changed in the last year. And I didn't. You just fucking weren't listening to me before. Before you were just thinking of me as a booker and this person who's like a cog in the machine that works for you that doesn't have any like dimensional opinions, you know, three dimensions.
Yeah. They made some convenient assumptions.
Exactly.
Which is, I think, kind of the theme of doing comedy during the pandemic is making a lot of convenient assumptions.
Yeah, exactly. So I do think it'll be awkward, but it's like it's not like it hasn't happened before. I think I said it on the show one time. I've definitely told Jake about this, but like, you know, when the whole Shane Gillis thing happened, that he got fired from SNL, I tweeted about it, and I did. I don't even remember what I said, but obviously, like, I tweet about it how I do everything, which is like in a general observing and assessing the situation kind of thing, and not attacking and not like even really naming him too much or anything. And then one day at the stand, he just like walks up to me out of nowhere. And he's just like, hey man, what's up? And I was like, oh, hey, like expecting it to be weird. Cause I was literally just talking about your situation on Twitter publicly. Right? And then he just looks at me and he's like, so I saw your tweets. And I was like, oh, did you, what did you think? And then he just goes, no, man, I agree with you. You got the right angle on it. It is what it is. And I'm like, okay, see, so we can get past this awkward shit where like you can respect my disagreement or my opinion being different from yours. I wasn't the person to be hateful or shitty towards you first at any point to anybody in comedy.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a bunch of people I'm not going to be friends with you anymore. I don't want to work with you anymore. I do feel like there's more responsibility to be taken in certain ways about who you associate with. But like Jake said, it's gonna be awkward. I'm not gonna do the fucking like, oh, let's just pretend the last year didn't happen.
Well, I mean, I don't, I always bring this up when you mention this or whatever, but I don't know how much we talked about on the show, but like you and I have pretty similar opinions about what happened in that event, and that guy was like, hey, it's cool, I agree with you, to you, and then like I'm like public enemy number one. We have the same opinion.
Okay, fair. Yeah. Fair, but Kath, you be the arbiter here. Am I not okay? Not a lot, but slightly more tactful than Jake.
I mean, Jake, you were certainly more antagonistic about it for sure. But I agree that you don't substantively have different opinions.
I agree,
and this is something that I feel like I run into a little bit too. Is like, I feel like a lot. COVID is something different because there's the potential for actual harm, but like with a lot of this stuff, it's like, it doesn't necessarily, like, I don't want to be on sides in a lot of ways, except for, you know, there are certain lines that like fuck the compound media people, like that kind of stuff. But if it's like, if you just say mean, offensive shit on stage, like that doesn't necessarily mean that I won't associate with you or that I don't like you or even that I don't respect you. Like we're colleagues in this business. And like, I do feel like some sort of basic solidarity with that, but people act like if you don't like to personally do that, that means that you hate them as a person.
Yeah.
And they act like it's like you're, like you said, like public enemy number one, like you're a piece of shit for not saying racial slurs on stage. And it's like, I don't actually give this much of a shit. COVID is a little different. And I don't really know how I'm going to navigate that. Like, I mean, I'm pretty... like I've always been pretty upfront with people with stuff like that. And I also was not like, I'm not really in a career position where like I have to work with people who I don't like a lot. Yeah. Like, because like the types of things I get booked on, like I do more, you know, I'm like a fucking DSA benefit show comic. That's like all my booking. So like, it's a little bit of a different thing, but like, I do wonder, cause like, I definitely do have friends that are performing in situations that like I where I wouldn't
you
perform.
Wouldn't. Yeah. No, same. But you know what? I think you're getting to exactly the point of it, which I think is maybe all our common problem, which is that a lot of times we make our decisions in comedy. Allow me to speak for you for a second, and then you can correct me if I'm wrong. But it seems like all three of us make our decisions in comedy a lot of times based on a value judgment about whether we think something is right or wrong. Whereas a large portion of comedy people, not just comedians, but also, you know, everybody around them, are making their decisions in comedy around an economic factor.
Yeah.
And so they make certain compromises because their decision is around this economic factor. How do I increase money, spots, pay, all of that stuff? And then they meet people like us who are making the decision that sometimes is contrary to the economic factor, but it's like we're very confident in the value reason as to why we did this. And we can see, hey, you and I, we're just seeing the world different and we're making different decisions. But a lot of times they see that as a personal insult.
Like as a judgment.
Yeah, yeah. Like we're judging them because they are not making value judgments over their career. They're making economic judgments. And sometimes we are, especially when Jake and I literally are, but it's not really like that. Like I understand the capitalism reasons that you have to do all these things. You know what I mean?
It's like a person Absolutely. Feels guilty because they know what they're doing is kind of wrong. And then they see yeah. you not doing the same thing. And they're like, you think you're better than me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I mean, I can understand that feeling. Cause you know, like it is like, I am proud that I make those value judgments, and I understand why that can read as like condescension, even though I like work really hard to not be judgmental in that way. And that's like kind of what I was going to say about comics is like, I don't want to hold any judgment. And I don't really think I do for comics who are working right now. It's more the bookers that I have a problem with, but,
Same.
But like one thing that the pandemic has really clarified for me is that I appreciate the luxury of having a part-time day job. Like I make half of my income from podcasting and stuff. And then until a few months ago when I got laid off because of the pandemic, I had a part-time day job. And having a non-comedy job gives me the luxury to say no to stuff that I don't want to do. And I really like being in a position of being able to say no to stuff that I don't want
yeah.
to do.
Yeah. Absolutely. I tell it to people all the time because I've had like day jobs and shit through most of comedy, but I don't know if I would use the word luxury. I think doing comedy full time is the luxury. This is like kind of a more normal space to be operating out of.
No, but there are people. No. So like Jake, if you accept the premise we all accept that capitalism controls all of our lives, if they have already bought in a way where they don't, you know, like we talk about like rich people having a safety net, let's say, right? In a way, the working class safety net, if you want to be an artist, is to maintain a job and be good at a skill that is like marketable and you do, you know, so that you can support yourself in capitalism and do your art in this value system way. But I don't want to say bought in because that sounds condescending, but they're going the path of like, this is my only job. And I don't know,
I think there's
hard.
Pros and cons to yeah. both of those things. Like, I think that's like, I don't think one is better than the other or one is superior to the other. Like, I think it's very admirable when people are just like, I'm just going to do this. This is all I'm going to do. I'm going to put all my eggs in that basket.
But don't you also know people that are like, they're not good at the thing. They have no skills.
Oh, yeah.
They just throw
yeah.
themselves into it. And they're like, and then they start making all these immoral decisions and they start backing up with, well, but I have to because I'm,
I have to because
I'm a professional comedian, which is a thing I decided, you know, 3 days ago or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, no, that's why I have a lot of respect for comics that I know who are professional comedians or were right before the pandemic, in meaning like they didn't have another job that's not comedy related. Mm-hmm. And they did choose to not perform and to find other ways to do voiceover shit, to do writing for social media, you know, like they found other ways. And and some of those are the people that I've talked to about the anxiety of returning. And it's just so weird to me that the ones who have been performing this whole time are like living in this anxiety that we are judging them. And then all of us who didn't perform are living in this anxiety of like, oh, now I have to talk to these fucking weirdos who performed the whole year. Like, I don't know. It's just very strange. And I am feeling it personally because I think I maybe agreed to start a show in New York like a month from now. So it's not like, you know, it's also, if everything works out, it's in a very large venue. So it will be safer than all of these small club inside shows. So I don't feel like a huge hypocrite, but I do feel like a small hypocrite.
Well, I think like that's because I'm going to Austin in like a month, yeah, and I'm doing an indoor show there.
Yeah.
And the only reason I'm doing it is because I know the people who run it will enforce their rules.
Yeah.
And like, I would not there. I really can't think of very many places in New York right now where I would do an indoor show, just because everybody I know who I trust is running stuff outdoors.
Yes, exactly.
But like,
I have not been to an indoor show in New York in over a year. I know that they're happening and, you know, whatever, like we said, respect to everyone, but I agree exactly like what you're saying. The people I trust are still doing outdoor stuff. I don't feel safe to do it.
But it is like, if you're doing an indoor show, it's like, well, I trust Louisa to actually set this up in a way where like, I was just talking about this because this whole thing happened with wrestling this past weekend. So it was WrestleMania weekend. And
right.
They had fucking super spreader events because it's a carny business and they don't care. But yeah, like, it's you. I think the thing is like, you just need to do what you advertise so that people can make an informed decision about attending or not attending. And there are enough vaccinated people now that I don't think running an indoor show in a month that's spaced out, that you wear masks, you do all of that stuff, I don't think that's necessarily unethical. But I do think if you tell people that that's what you're doing, and you have to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, no. And I am 100% going to be like, even the comics that I book, you know, it's a little weird to be like, are you vaccinated? But I think I'm going to ask. And I also think that I am going to reassure comics that like, if you arrive and you don't feel comfortable or safe, you can leave and it's not a problem. And I totally understand that kind of thing. But I, you know, I can't really like say all the details because I'm still working it out. I haven't gotten the contract agreement for the venue and stuff, but like, they seemed very willing, you know, to just be like, yeah, we're going to follow all the rules. They want to pay the comics. Everything will be, you know, up and up. And so it just feels very much like an opportunity to re-enter in a way where I would be contributing to something instead of just being like, oh, I think everybody's doing everything wrong. Like, let me try to do something right and be a good place where some safety and shit could happen. But I immediately panicked. Brandy, a comic from LA, she like, when I tweeted about like, I'm going to start a show, she immediately was like, oh, but you just said on the last podcast last week how happy you were. Are you sure you want to do this? And I'm like, no, you're so right. I know it's a problem. But here's the next thing I wanted to talk to you guys about. As you re-enter, right? Well, and you also haven't told me about your re-entry plans. So, Kath, you're going to Austin. You're going to do indoor shows. Jake, are you doing shows while you're in Texas or no?
No, I mean, I came down here just for like a weird family emergency
situation.
But
yeah,
I decided to, I think I'm going to go to Austin this weekend, but up in the air right now. I told people, I literally just, it's like Wednesday, and I just went, hey, you know what? I think I'm going to go. If there's room on stage, throw me on. If not, I don't care. You know,
dude, go check it out. Try to get up at the creek. Eddie Pepitone just did the creek.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, shit. Yeah. I saw that. No, I don't think I'm going to do that. I think on principle, not going to do that. But like other bar shows and stuff, like I'm vaccinated and the government abandoned us and the rules are very unclear and it kind of seems like it's okay.
Exactly.
And all these things are, I still don't think that, I don't have a definite answer on this, but it does seem like we're in a space where like, I'm definitely not going to take the side of like a culture warrior, like running around and yelling, why aren't you wearing a mask to people and stuff like that?
Yeah,
like, I just don't think that, I think that that is making more of a statement about yourself than it is that you're actually concerned about the coronavirus at this point, because we're in a very strange, unknowable area of this whole thing. I just did, Duncan Trussell's podcast this last week, and I've been thinking about this thing that we got on a lot, because I kept trying to figure out, like, how do I sell this guy communism? You know, like, how do I really get this guy, like, where he's at? And so I kept trying to make
that shouldn't be that hard. It seems like
he seems like he'd be receptive.
Yeah, receptive.
Well, the thing is, a lot of that, like, spiritual, like, occult stuff, and, like, mindfulness and meditation is oddly, it's idealistic instead of materialistic, right? And so the whole time I was trying to explain to him, like, you know, how these things are actually very similar. And one thing I kind of got to that I'm very, my head is really stuck on right now is I was trying to explain like how we're under a spell, right? To put it in very like Duncan Trussell terms, like we're under a spell, and the spell is pretty much capitalism is this like time demon that tells you that you are no longer, you know, in like the factory. You are no longer a worker. You no longer have a boss. It's very funny. We live in a modern version of old timey power dynamics, but they're all like, you're free and you're not an employee. Right. You're a team worker.
There's a ping pong table here.
Yeah. And it's like, but it's the same thing, right? And I was talking to him about how they used to put, so used to be when you bought cake mix, you the whole thing was powdered and then it comes in a box
you
in the
1950s
and no you just
no,
add
just water?
Listen, that's important, right? You just add water and then you put it in a pan and then you bake the cake, right? And what happened is people stopped buying this shit because it made them feel like they didn't have agency, like it felt like cheap, right? And so they hired this guy Edward Bernays, who's this step he's the nephew of Sigmund Freud. And Sigmund
Freud, is he the sauce
guy? He invented
the
like
sauce?
Public relations,
PR,
not the sauce,
not the Bernays sauce guy. No. He invented PR, right?
And he did not invent the sauce.
He came along with PR and this whole science of like how do we make people feel certain ways in capitalism, yeah, right?
Yeah.
He did. I think it was him. It might have been people that fucking came out of what he birthed or whatever. But the point is, they figured out that if you take the egg out. You unpowder the egg and then you sell people the cake mix and then on the box it says go to the fucking thing, go to the fridge and get an egg and put it in there. People started buying it more because they felt like they're doing something, right?
Like a more real cake.
Like you just, capitalism sells you all these micro interactions throughout the day that make you feel like you're doing something and it has nothing to do, no bearing on anything, right?
Right.
But that's what's more important is you feeling the agency, right? And I think that's what's going on. To argue devil's advocate against us being like a you should be safe podcast and all this stuff, there is also like the people that are like Nazis about the pandemic, it's all egg shit. It's all them just I need control and you know, look at me, I'm a good person and all this stuff.
And that's why like
security theater.
And that's why like I as you know, I like people who are anti-vax or whatever, like I get very frustrated with them, but like your average person who's like maybe making riskier decisions than me, I try very hard not to be judgmental of that. And I also try not to be judgmental of the like mask Nazis because we're in a situation where like no one feels any agency or control.
Yeah.
And they sadly, probably because of the fucking fascistic society we live in, they feel a sense of control when they are telling other people what to do.
Right.
And I think they should probably, I think they should probably like look inward to figure that out. But like, I don't think that necessarily means that we should be shitty to them either. It's because it's a very human impulse.
No, you're galaxy brained and zen and mindful and like a fully actualized person when you see all of this and you're just like, I'm gonna go to the bar. Like, I'm just gonna, I don't even know how to fucking fix what all these people are going through.
No, this is the perfect segue to my second question to you guys. The second thing that's been driving me crazy, because I think you're right. It's a thing that not just comics and comedy people are going through with this whole like reentry anxiety. It's like everyone in the world, right? This pressure to, I guess, kind of like already formulate how you're going to do better or
what's
different.
Your policy?
Your plan for reopening? Like, what are you going to do? How are you going to balance your life? Even when Brandy was like, oh, but I thought you were happy, I immediately was like, yeah, but I'm going to do better. I'm only going to do one show. I'm not going to cancel dates to go to comedy shows.
I think there's a real opportunity here for people to like address all this stuff and take what the moment forced on you to help you understand what your relationship was with this thing that you were doing for all this time. But I'm so like skeptical that anyone will really do it. It seems like people are just ready to dive right back in and just stop thinking about it.
So I agree with you, Jake, but also isn't it a little bit of like telling people like, oh, aren't you going to write Hamlet during the, you know, or whatever the fucking thing was, where it's like you have to write a whole, your play, your manifesto, get something done this fucking year.
Fair enough.
That's unfair pressure.
You don't need to think about this shit at all. I'd be a little judgmental when I say that, I guess, because I just feel like it would be a good idea, but you know, maybe not. You just this is one big cope, you know. I don't know.
I don't know. What are you doing, Kath? What do you think?
Well, I mean, yeah, I think, like I said, I think going through this has sort of clarified some things for me about like how I want my life to look. And like I said, like sort of realizing like I don't necessarily want a full-time showbiz job. I'm never gonna, it's also really clarified the importance of being able to perform for me, like that it actually is like very, very important that I get to do stand-up and that I keep working at it. A lot of people I know like kind of went through this and realized like I don't really miss it, and that's weird, but I realized like no,
a lot of the people who end up writing, for example, for TV shows, this is not a judgment on them, but I think they have a moment that is like partially this is the economic right decision to make, to put all my time into like writing for a TV show. But then there's also a partial like realization that like I didn't actually love performing, or it wasn't my best skill, so they can easily move over to this other thing. And I think that's great, and you should fucking let them go if you don't like it. And the opposite is also awesome, to realize like that you need that in your life. And like I'm not a performer, but I've had the same realization of even before this, I would never want a full-time showbiz job.
Like it's not so much the realization of like, oh, when things come back, I need to really hustle. Like it's not, that isn't what it is, but it's like I can't imagine my life without doing stand up at least sometimes. And like I really like being able to make some money from it. I think like I certainly felt like very reflective all year of sort of how my life has gone, and like, you know, there were definitely some dark moments of like why did I make the decisions I made. But I don't think I'm gonna do anything drastically different. It was more just like maybe changing my relationships to the things that I do, and kind of with a more like clarity of motive about why I do them.
That's good. I like that clarity of motive thing. I think that's something I'm going to try to apply now that you say it, like put it that way, because I am guilty of the hustle shit before pandemic times. Maybe not right up until pandemic, because I had like what we call the huge depression of 2018. So I started to like step back a lot in like 2018 and 2019. But before then, I was doing the hustle shit. Like I had so many shows going. When I didn't have my own shows to run, I made it my business to be at every venue in New York City. I was like proud of the fact that I knew every comic working in New York, and I like knew their set, and I felt like I had to be there to see, you know, like it would be embarrassing to me if another booker was like, have you seen so-and-so, and I haven't. You know what I mean? So I just made it everything, to the point where you guys, like, I canceled dates because I had a show that had a good lineup. So this is something for you, Kath. Being a lady comic who dates men, unfortunate, sorry. Well, it's a problem, but bringing men into your world in comedy is a very difficult endeavor in comedy, because you are basically like bringing a man who is not part of this world into this world, and then they are just constantly confronted with the fact that people want to talk to you, but they don't give a shit who he is. And they are very like, oh, are you a comic? No. Oh, anyway, so Luis, you know, and they just like completely dismiss him. And there are very few men who are comfortable with that, who can continue to be confident and like want to date you when you're surrounded by all these kinds of people, you know? So one of the things that I think I definitely am going to try to maintain is the balance of like you said, I can't imagine my life without doing something in stand-up. I love stand-up. It was never my goal to work in it, but I like it, and I especially now that like I do think that New York City is in a flux moment, you know, not just because of COVID, but because of all of this migration of comedians that is happening right now.
Sure,
right? And venues closing and new venues opening and all of that, it means that there is this opportunity for a whole new alt scene to grow in New York, where new people can do their shows and new people can move here if they didn't think they could before. It's like a bunch of other people have evacuated. It could be your time. You know, like, I don't know. There's a possibility. So I like that, and I find hope in that, and I want to be involved. But I definitely feel sure that I can't ever make like my personal life and my personal health and mental well-being second to comedy ever again.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very good to have like sort of boundaries going in about that. Yeah, balance, I think.
So, Jake, what about you? What's up with your boundaries in comedy?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I've been thinking about what you just said about, like, oh, you know, isn't this also judgmental if you're, like, telling people you didn't write Hamlet or something like that? And, like, on the one hand, like, I think that's true across the board with, like, people. But I think with comedians, though, here's why I am still judgmental is because comedians are judgmental and we're all ostensibly
that's your job.
Like everyone is considered themselves a fucking truth teller and is telling other people how to live constantly. So I think that it warrants criticism. And I think that's why these people get so frustrated because on the one hand, no one is deserving of this much criticism. And, you know, you shouldn't be criticized this much. But most of this stuff, you know, when I have people that are like, especially characterize me as being like really antagonistic or like, you know, like I'm starting shit all the time. I always check and make sure, like, has this person been poking other people in this exact way, right? Like fucking constantly.
you don't go after people who
don't deserve it, honestly.
No,
you have never gone after someone who was just minding their own business. That has like never happened. Yeah. It is always somebody who is doing the same to others.
Right. And it's almost, and I know I'm a dick because I am very much a mean comedian. So when I see someone, I have a little like Terminator scan in my head and I go, are they cool? Are they minding their own business? I won't. And then if I catch like, wait a minute, they are doing this to other people, then I'm like, all right, I get to fucking be mean to them. Like I'm like, I feel warranted about it. But to answer your question, I guess, about like getting back on stage and stuff, like I think I'm going to do spots, but I was at a place before this started where I didn't actively seek spots. I just, when people asked me to do them, I did them, and I had enough shit to do in between these sets.
Yeah.
And I also am not a grind person where it, like, you got to do fucking 20 sets a week or whatever. I know how to write material. I've been doing stand up long enough where I just know how to write it. Like, I don't need that much finesse on it or whatever. So like I'm in a place where I think I'm going to do it, but I wouldn't be surprised if I don't get booked that much because now there's this economy of like, you have to be really hungry to get back into it. And I also am fine. I don't feel like invalidated if I do one set a week or something like that. So I'm just going to feel it out. I mean, the thing is, it might retire me before I retire from it because I'm too
shut up. You won't, because you like doing it. So you will continue to do it when the opportunities appear, you know? And like, I don't know. I have a lot to respond to what you have just said because, well, and what Kat said too, because, okay, let's go back to one thing, which is like blaming bookers. I 100% agree. That is my policy is like, if you're mad at a comic, you should be more mad at the booker behind them. Right. And there was one booker of a New York City club who booked it. So this week, segue. Andrew Yang appeared at the Stand introducing Dave Chappelle, right? And another lesser spoken thing.
So dark.
Yeah. I know, so dark. Dark, darkest New York City timeline. In a pandemic, right? Don't forget to add that. And then a lesser known situation that happened was, I don't know which club, but Bethany Frankel. From Real Housewives of New York. I guess it's doing stand-up now, you guys.
All right, and
at a New York City club, I was on page 6. It was like a bringer situation because she had to have like a table of 7 or 8 people that she brought, you know?
That kind of rules. I sort of respect that, like, if you're a fucking housewife of New York City and you still have to do like shitty bringer shows, I'm like, all right, that's fine.
I know, exactly. So I'm like not even mad at Bethany. But a New York City booker, she books a comedy club. And she tweeted something where she was like, oh, like, let's not be mad at these celebrities who are doing, you know, paying to perform at comedy clubs. That way we can like milk them for the money instead of forcing comics to do the bringers. You know what I mean? And here's the thing, like, I sent this to Jake and Jake was like, I don't even understand what this means. And I was like, this makes me so mad. Like, literally what she is saying is like, oh, the only way our business can survive is by fleecing somebody.
She's admitting it's a scam.
Yeah. So then she's like, so how about instead of being mad that we're fleecing these celebrities to get some fucking 20 minutes on stage, we do that instead of fleecing the comics we usually fucking fuck over.
Right.
What are you talking? what? How do you live in this world where that's the, those are the only options to you, right?
Yeah.
So all of this, you know, goes back because I was like very mad about this Andrew Yang thing because, wait, no, not even, let's not even go to Andrew Yang because I want to go back to Jake's thing. So what you were saying about you attacking people and stuff like that and like the real, you know, doing your regular comedy. I feel the same way. You know, we talk about having the same opinions, but then at some point I'm like, how much is this worth my mental health? You know what I mean? Like, how much is it my job to police these people and fucking be the challenge to them? I don't know. I have my doubts that we should always be taking it on. Does that make sense? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a difference between you and me in that I'm a performer, and so I get, like, targeted.
So you have
in the
to,
way.
Yeah.
I mean, there's literally the thing I was telling you about the Shane Gillis thing earlier. Like, people literally just filter you out, and they go, it's not worth it to attack this person. It is advantageous to attack me, though.
Yeah.
Because I'm another comic, and it's able, you know, there's just this whole scapegoaty thing happening or whatever.
Yeah.
But, I mean, on the other hand, like, you know what? Some of these, sometimes I got on Twitter, and I go, Louisa, why are you still fucking with the stand-up New York guy? I've stopped.
And I couldn't help it. It happens. Or even the Andrew Yang thing, like I had to fucking share it because
you know what's funny about that guy,
yeah,
about Danny what's his face from Stand Up New York, he had a meeting with Andrew Yang and and this is why I knew, I mean, I fucking knew Andrew Yang was terrible or whatever, but I could tell something bad was coming is because Andrew Yang follows me and I tweeted him and all this shit and I was like, hey, like, look at this, look how this plays out, like, you're siding with fucking an owner and not like workers, like, the, what do you have to say about the people that work in these restaurants, including me, like my comic or whatever? He didn't fucking answer it. He's advantageous to him to be this like small business champion or whatever, and so that just created this like mutual jack off session between him and all these comedy club owners, and it's bad news because people do not understand why this is actually against like us. It looks really good fucking PR. I mean, it looks really good for them, you know. He looks like he's like, oh yeah, I'm working with the little guy, who the guy who owns the fucking stand is the little guy in this situation, you know.
No,
that's
totally.
What's so frustrating to me, and like it was like a year and a half ago and it still grinds my gears so much that people gave me such a hard time about the Louis C.K. shit, because I wrote an article about how like you can't have someone who jerks off in front of people at a workplace. Like, that's not allowed. And like, one of the main points I was trying to make in that is like, first of all, comedy is a job. But even outside of the fact that comedy is a job and that we are workers and that we like work at will of the small business owner bosses, most of the people who work in comedy clubs are service staff.
Right.
Like, it's just like a restaurant. It's just like a movie theater. It's the only difference is there's one person who's not doing that, who has a different job. But it's like these businesses are, it's a service industry. And so like, even if you think comics have power and agency in this situation, which most of us don't, most of us do not have the kind of clout to like take a stand about things. Most of the people who work there are even less it sort of advantaged than we are, and they don't have a say, and like they have to go back to work when it opens.
Well,
and sling,
you know,
drinks.
When that happened, I remember thinking like there's a lot of knots that people work themselves into trying to catch you in like an inconsistency about that, because I do think that there is an argument to be made that like, since what we're doing, since we live in a time and place where we have this thing like stand up that is like an elective job, like I am trying to do it rather than my back. Hold on, let me get to my finishing point here though. It's like there is like, you could criticize someone and say like, well, you know, I mean, you're not like a worker in maybe necessarily the same sense that someone working at the restaurant is, but you're right. This also, like, you shouldn't book Louis C.K. if you have workers at your fucking restaurant that are service industry. But here's the third thing. If you don't think the comedians are workers, then fucking Louis C.K. isn't a worker. So fuck him. He shouldn't be allowed in the restaurant. Like, there's no situation in which he is a worker and like the comedian who he's harassing isn't. Just are worshiping rich people.
The only comedians who are workers are the ones who sexually assault people or say retarded in their act.
Right.
Those are the
right.
ones that are workers.
This like post
left
thing.
The rest of us
thing?
Are dilettantes yeah. And we can give it up at any time.
It's like yeah. selectively applying labor politics to the worst people. And then the people that are cool, yeah. like, you know, you're making, you know.
Well, so listen, so last night I was at the bar with some friends. Half of them were performers. It was only like four of us, but half of them were performers. And the conversation about small business owners came up. I got drunk. I became communist in a belligerent way, right? And so, and it sucked because we're at a bar that is our favorite neighborhood bar. So we know the owner. We're literally friends with the small business owner who runs it. And we're having this conversation where I was like, it wasn't about Andrew Yang, but I was specifically saying to them that there's a problem in America with our identification with small business owners, right? With this idea of like mom and pop businesses deserve to be saved or supported and all of this stuff, where I have always been against them from a worker point of view in the sense of like where I want to work, right? Corporations are bad in a lot of fucking ways, but mom and pop shops don't usually give you benefits. They fucking, the first thing that they do when they have to make their bottom line is cut people's hours, is cut people, like there is no HR, you know, there is no fucking even semblance of protection for a worker. In most small businesses, it falls to the small business owner to be a good person who wants to provide their workers with a fair working environment, right? And what I was trying to say to these friends who became very upset, because one is like borderline libertarian, and he does very much believe, you know who I'm talking about,
yeah.
He does very much believe that the small business owner is an important facet of American life. And then another one is a friend of mine who is not in comedy but works for a small business, right? And it's a small business that is currently flourishing and opening like new locations and all this shit, right? So their issue is that they insist on viewing small business owners as workers who are making it. You get me? Like the kid.
Yeah, yeah.
They're like, you're like us, but you are smart.
But this is like,
right. You're page, the successful yes, version of me.
Exactly.
Like, this is like page you're, one of the communist, like communism yes, for children. Like, is that this exactly, is not true.
So
like,
we're going to go through it. Yeah. So this is what I went through. Right. And I'm like drunk. Right. And I'm trying to explain to them, like, this is the big fucking fallacy of the thing is that even so, yeah, there's a bunch of us who are workers and we believe the idea. There's a bunch of immigrants. We believe the idea if we become the business owner, then we ascend in class somehow and we get to live a better kind of life off of other people's labor. Right. That's ultimately what you're doing.
Yeah.
And in reality, those people are class traitors. Like, I don't know how else to say it. Like, this is me drunk last night being like, yeah, no, the owner of the creek and the owner of this bar are class traitors. So, like, I just laid it out like that. I'm like, I need you to understand that if a person has a common situation with you and their solution is to escape that situation and leave you behind, they are not your friend. Okay.
Mm.
Whereas if the person has a similar situation to you and they try to bring you up in every way when they move up, that's different. But again, it puts it on the individual onus to be a good person and a good business owner and an exception to the rule in a way that is probably unprofitable for you to do, right? So it just doesn't work. And so I need people to stop believing this idea that the small business owner reflects like the epitome of the worker kind of thing, instead of realizing that it reflects the bottom of the corporate capitalist.
Right.
And this is what makes me mad about Andrew Yang, to bring it all back, right? That he, you know, I there's a lot of reasons he's popular. There's people that like his ideas and all of that shit. But the comedy angle makes me really mad. You guys remember the Dave Chappelle, what do you call it, campaigned for him for his presidential election?
Yeah.
Recall? Mm-hmm. He did an interview. Hold on, because I fucking took notes. Oh, my God. He did an interview where it was like him and Andrew Yang getting interviewed. And I watched the video and one of the reporters asks Chappelle, like, why he believes that Andrew Yang is great and whatever. And this motherfucker literally says, hold on. He's like, he says, one day Andrew Yang tweeted about me. He said, I like Dave Chappelle. I think he's so funny. And then a bunch of people told me about it, that Andrew Yang, presidential candidate, was tweeting about me. So I read his book. So then he's like, so I read the book and then I'm really impressed. Do you guys know what he was impressed by?
What?
This is what I can't wait to find out.
This is what he was impressed by. Wait, hold on. I have so many notes on Andrew Yang. because there was also the article he wrote last week where he was trying to make Asian Americans be more American, but we're going to talk about that in 1 second. Hold on. Oh no, this is his terrible quote. Whatever. So he said, he said something where he was like, I am so impressed by his narrative and by the fact that it took so much courage to be the first Asian American to run for president of the United States. So his entire reasoning, or the first thing that came out of his mouth as to why to support this person, is identity politics. It's not even identity politics, but like identity in the wrong way that people use it, right? Not in actual identity politics as the system was meant.
Yeah.
He felt, or he's like adding to this idea that somehow representation is what matters in policy as opposed to actual policy. And he used his popularity to get all these bros. So like the Dave Chappelle to Joe Rogan to Elon Musk to Andrew Yang fucking pipeline. It's super clear to me. And I'm like, how do you not see that you're popularizing this person's bad policies? Like, so speaking of whether or not he cares about the service industry people in these clubs that work for small business owners, you guys saw that last week he tweeted something about like one of the first things he would do as NYC mayor is crack down, or like not crack down, but like deal with the fact that there's so many unlicensed street vendors.
Yeah.
Motherfucker.
He's going to destroy alt comedy.
Yeah. And let me ask you guys this. How is a street vendor not a small business owner?
Right.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So how are you just fucking not realizing that you are endorsing racist policies that will just lead to more harassment of brown people trying to make a living on the street while pretending to support the little guy, quote unquote, that runs a business that has walls? Like, what are you fucking talking about? I hate this motherfucker. And I hate that comedians keep playing, present company excluded, keep playing this card of like, oh, we're just doing jokes. It's not political. And on top of that, being mad. Like Dave Chappelle has literally ranted about, oh, everybody making comedy too political. But this motherfucker had...
He's stumping for a politician.
A politician. Yeah. Yeah. What are you doing?
You can't have it both ways. And like, yeah. It's, I don't know. I struggle with this a lot because like, I really, you know, believe that like, if you're really good at stand-up comedy, I get why people think that means you're smart, but it doesn't. It just means you're good at jokes. It means you're good at telling jokes on stage.
Yeah.
And like, and maybe you have some kind of interesting insight, but like you really do not have any, you are no closer to the truth than any other human being. You have learned a skill and like, I don't know. I struggle with it because like obviously my politics are very important to me and I, you know, I'm very like sort of openly political. But as far as my comedy goes, like my act isn't like I just want to make people laugh and entertain people. And like, I don't know. I would never say like it's just a joke, you know, like I think political comedy has utility, but you can't talk out of both sides of your mouth about it. Like,
yeah,
you can't complain that people, you can't like get mad that people are reading too much into what you say and then endorse a politician. And like I said at the beginning of the show, like Andrew Yang should run for mayor of Austin because like this kind of, there's this confluence going on of all of these different types of people that are moving to Austin. It's it's your Joe Rogans, it's your Elon Musk, and then there's also a lot of like really freaky kind of alt-right new age people moving there. Like, you know, like the Pastel Q, like those people are moving to Austin. And to me, Andrew Yang is like the politician of that sphere.
Of that group. Yeah.
And it's so malevolent to me because I feel like it is just not what it seems. Like it seems it's the same thing as Elon Musk where it's like, oh, he likes Rick and Morty. Like, no, this guy is bad news and you should not listen to him. I feel that way about Andrew Yang.
Yeah, me too. Me too. And it's so hard to put into words.
That's why I went on Duncan Trussell's podcast, is because I don't
to try to fix him.
Well, because I think his audience is a lot of those freaky, like,
yeah,
like those people you were just describing who are like, huh, how is there like a supernatural element to all of this weird ideology? But it's like, it's in
there. It's like libertarian mysticism. It's really weird.
It's like, so you know. It's somehow mysticism overlapped with all this individualism, which is how you get like, you need to be mindful, you need to meditate and all this stuff.
It's American New Age religion is like it makes sense that these things have dovetailed because it is super, even though it takes all of this terminology from like Buddhism and stuff, it's super self-centered.
Yeah.
It's self-wellness.
It takes something that is like good and puts it in the wrong ass context, and that's like the whole problem, you know.
Yeah, but I hope you can reach them,
Jim. I don't know, I mean, this is just like you know, I agree with everything we're talking about, and so I guess to me that was like one tactic that had occurred to me at one point, like, oh, maybe there is some way to sort of influence via that, you know. But that is one of many things. I don't know how to really fix all this stuff as like an individual or as a comedian or whatever. So like, it's weird. We can sit here and just sort of like observe what is happening with Andrew Yang and all this shit all day. And I you know, sometimes people go like, well, what should I do about it? I'm like, I don't fucking know. You know, I don't know how much power we have.
No. I am so glad that you brought it to that though, because that's one of the things that I was going to say that I agreed with you earlier. Like when I said the thing about like, oh, aren't we putting all the pressure on people of like write the Hamlet or whatever the fuck it's supposed to be that you do over this pandemic year. I do agree with you in the sense that if you're a comedian, whether you're like a value judgment comedian or an economic judgment comedian, you still consider this to be your craft, right? So like, it is your job, your responsibility to consider how you do it and why you do it and whether it needs to be adjusted how you were doing it before, not just in the economic sense, not just in like how, like, you know, if you're already spending all the time of like, how do I get more followers? How do I get booked more? How do I get more money for shit?
Well, everyone's also already claiming to be doing all this work of fine tuning what they're talking about and finding the truth and stuff like that. And then they get called, you know, criticized over it. I don't even want to use fucking a term like call out that's so like liberally charged. I mean, someone literally just criticizes you. And then the whole thing falls apart like an insecure house of cards. And you're like, fuck you, I'm doing it. And it's like,
right.
But
did you even think about the words you were saying on stage?
Because
kind of the point of what you're doing. You like, can't, that's a surprise to you?
It's talking out of both sides of your mouth. You can't call yourself a fucking truth teller if you don't think, you should be obsessing about what you say and trying to figure out if it's right or not. If you're claiming that what you're doing has that much
power.
That
is exactly the crux of the matter, though, because if there's a bunch of people in comedy who are operating under the sense of like, the way I fine-tune my jokes is, are they hitting? Are they selling? You know what I mean? Like, in this fucking capitalist economic sense of like, are there people who buy my words the way that I'm putting them out? That is different from, are my words representing me the way that I want to be representing? Are they conveying the idea I meant to convey? Are they bringing me the people that have the same point of view and worldview as me? Or am I fucking selling some shit to people that I don't agree with? You know?
Yeah.
That's also your job. Yeah. And I don't understand how a bunch of these comics are just like, no, but I'm funny. I have 100,000 followers.
Well, so I mean, Andrew Yang is like a perfect example of how this stuff gets like passed off as like, you know, because when you have a comedian and they're ostensibly saying that they're like searching for the truth, but they're really motivated by what sells and what gets them ahead in the fucking industry, they have to square the circle and say, well, I've decided that what sells is the truth. And that because I am X, Y, or Z, or you're a small business owner, and you're saying like, you are the business, you're justifying like you getting ahead as like, well, this is meaningful in some way, you know, this must be for the greater good. And it's just like, there's just like no one wants to look the contradiction square in the face that there are some things that are good that aren't like profitable for you and your career or whatever.
Yeah,
we're doing it. It's fine. We're taking it on for everybody, Jake. It's fine. Our guests also taking it on. It's great. I don't know. So what does this mean? We're all doing shows next month? What's going on?
Yeah, probably. I'm going to be headlining The Stand. It'd come out to my show.
Yeah. No, I'm drawing the line there. We're not.
Sorry to go way back, but like, my thing about shows too, that's like Jake was saying, I'm vaccinated. I hit my like full vaccination about a week ago, and I've been like, I've been out and about, like I've been wearing a mask, but I've been doing a lot. And like, that's, I'm fine incurring that risk. Like my roommate's vaccinated and all that stuff. But like the thing that's weird to me about comedy is like, I'm down to do a comedy show. I'm down to do an indoor show if I know the rules are going to be enforced, but I feel weird about telling people to come.
Yeah.
That is where I feel extremely weird.
That, yeah. We got to do promos that are like, you know, if you're vaccinated and you wear a mask and you feel safe.
Like, no, so for sure. I mean, the way I was operating before the pandemic was like, you know, fuck these fucking clubs. I'll go book my own tours and shit. But that's literally talking to people that like I connect with online and stuff, and just going like, come to this place. And like, I don't know. I can't foresee a moment in the near future where I would feel like that would even work. You know, because like there's this like uneasiness. So I don't know. I mean, I think that like we're still in a situation where like the fucking little just ratty, scabby, like wiener guys that got ahead in all of this are going to be like actively doing comedy while we're like passively engaged in it.
Dipping our toe in while they're still running around. Look, well, let them have their little time to shine, because eventually they are going to be stamped out, because like most of those people aren't very funny.
They're not good. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yes. I've been doing my part to let comedy fans know, like, in a lot of cases, there's like some headliners that are still working
who
are
good
at what they do. But the majority of comics who have been performing throughout this whole year, you guys saw, you and I talked about Roy Wood Jr.'s thread that he did a few months ago, where he was like talking about how all the comics, I don't know if you saw this, Kath, he was like, all comics should be prepared for the fact that like when things reopen, we're going to be operating at a like level down kind of situation where all the headliners are going to be taking weekday spots because they need to fucking get back on getting the money they were getting before. And all the clubs are going to be operating on limited capacity. So they need to ensure they're selling the most. So they're only booking this higher level than they did before. So everybody is going to be moving one level down. Like if you were doing great and almost getting into the clubs, now you're going back to alt shows. If you were getting into those alt shows, now you're going back to open mics. You know, and it's like everybody prepare. And there was John Mulaney. I mean, it turned out he was, I guess, going through a thing and had to go to rehab. But he, I don't know if you guys remember, it was like 2 days after after Roy Wood Jr.'s thread. John Mulaney, it was announced that he was going to write for Seth Meyers. Oh shit, it's starting already.
It's happening.
Headliners are writing for fucking late night show. What is happening right now? So I do think that that's a thing that very much happened. And so when a bunch of people who were talented vacated a bunch of spots and a bunch of venues, all these people who were willing to do it because they wouldn't have been booked before took these spots. And so I've been telling comedy fans, like, you're seeing bad comedy right now. Like, trust me, this is not good. Don't judge comedy for what you're seeing right now. It's either headliners who have literally not written shit in a year, or open micers who are being elevated outside of their skill set. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we gotta see. It's gonna be like a Tetris domino situation where everybody has to like fall into a weird place. I don't know. Reopening is going to be weird.
Yeah.
It'll be very strange. I am looking forward to it though.
Me too.
I couldn't go. I was supposed to go to a show last night and I couldn't. And like, I just want to go watch a comedy show I'm not on, which as a stand-up who's been doing it for a decade.
Rare.
That is a rare feeling.
Yeah.
I'm not going to name any names, but did you guys hear this thing happen on Twitter yesterday where like somebody, I think they had hit up a booker and the booker responded to them and said, well, you haven't been grinding for the last year.
Yes, I did see this.
And all these like dumbass people are like, yo, you've been insulting us this whole time and now you want in and all this shit. Like, those were drama about it.
That's the thing is like, I don't necessarily think that everybody who's been doing comedy during this year is a bad comic, but I do think the people who are proud of it are almost universally bad comics. Like, some people are like, you know, we've all had to make difficult decisions. Kat, like, that's one thing. But
Kat, the good comics who have continued to perform are doing it in shame. Yeah. Like, yeah, like quietly still like, oh, I have a date. Nobody, you know, like, yeah, I'm sorry. I'm still performing. <You know?
laughs> Yeah, exactly.
And the ones that are just like, I'm at New York Comedy Club Penthouse. It's like, oh, yeah, it's because they didn't book you before, buddy.
Yeah.
I'm so proud of this.
It's like, this is not the own you think it is kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You're, if you are opening, that means you would have not been working there, not in a pandemic. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. No. And, dude, that we talked about the check spot thing. But yeah, I think a lot of comics need to reassess what you're willing to accept in the same way that I am. Right. Of, I'm admitting it. I was letting people walk all over me in a lot of ways. And I don't know. Write your Hamlet in terms of your boundaries. Story. Yeah. In terms of your boundaries and what you want to do.
Write your boundaries, what, Hamlet.
Yes. And what you actually want out of this.
What a stupid sentence.
Shut up.
That could be such a good like headline. Just
that's the is that the title of the episode?
Write your boundaries, Hamlet. Yeah, that's pretty funny. Yeah. Like a personal essay on some dumbass website.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. That's where I'm gonna.
It wasn't even Hamlet. It was King Lear.
King Lear. Yeah. Thank you. I'm sorry.
Oh wait, maybe, no. Hold on. I think it was Macbeth.
You could have corrected me on this like fucking an hour ago. I'm not even sure.
I couldn't remember though.
It might not even be King Lear.
I think it is King Lear. I think it is. No, it's King Lear.
I don't know, but it is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, now I'm 90%.
Hey, isn't it crazy though that we don't even remember? Because that was the joke of the week, the first month of the pandemic. It's been so long. Remember Tiger King?
It's been terrible. I will say, as a like last Andrew Yang hate thing, he wrote an op-ed last week on Washington Post, and it was titled, "What the fuck did he call it?" It's called "We Asian Americans Are Not the Virus, But We Can Be Part of the Cure." And
write your boundaries, Hamilton, by Andrew Yang.
Yeah, dude. And this motherfucker, like, it was supposed to be about the huge rise in anti-Asian violence, right, mm-hmm. around the country, not just the shooting in Atlanta, but there was like a family killed in Texas. An Asian family was like slaughtered in their house. There's been multiple attacks in New York City and San Francisco of, you know, elderly Asian people in the street. So he, you know, was purportedly writing a fucking piece about this, right, about how fucked up it is. Do you know what this motherfucker wrote? He wrote a fucking "let's show them that we are as American as them" piece.
Ugh.
Let's volunteer and let's be good and let's be that model minority. And like Asian comics, Asian organizers, like a lot of people within his own community responded like, dude, this is not it. Like, yeah. what are you talking about? Like, literally, so apparently, like, I read the thing, and so one of the examples that he used, this dumb motherfucker, he's so stupid, dude. He was like making the point of how like Asian Americans are as American as Americans. And so he was like using the fact that a bunch of like Japanese Americans volunteered to fight in World War II and were killed in service. And then, like, all these organizers write back to him, and they're like, yeah, 33,000 Japanese Americans tried to be Captain America and prove to you that we were on your side. And then 120,000 Japanese Americans were put into concentration camps.
Yeah.
Right.
He already learned the lesson that being Captain America is not going to get our respect and our humanity. Why do you still think that that's the way to do it in 2021? So,
it's
whenever somebody.
Advantageous to Andrew
right.
Yang.
Exactly. Well, and so, whenever somebody wants to be like, oh, identity. Shit with him, like Chappelle did, of like, look, he's Asian, he's a minority, whatever. He's selling out his own identity and saying shit that he says. You know what I mean? Like, he sucks. I fucking hate him.
I feel like it speaks to what we were saying about like, he's probably gonna win.
He's gonna win.
But I feel like it speaks to what we were saying, where it's like, it seems innocuous, but then like, you peel back one layer and you're like, this is malevolent. And like, that just this idea of like, oh, it's great to encourage people to volunteer, like that. Yeah. A lot of people read that kind of patriotism as like nice, like, oh, nice, that's a nice thing. And then like, you take one like
one historical step back. Yeah.
One sort of like glancing hint at the historical context. And you're like, oh no, this is like fucking bootstraps bullshit. This is bad.
Yeah. But you know, I mean, what's interesting about that and interesting about Yang to me specifically is that like any other politician, we could sort of make an argument that is often made about politicians, which is that like they're lying and that behind the scenes they're like eating babies and all this stuff and that they're this is like a put on deliberately to advance themselves and use like PR in this really cynical way, right? But I think with him, I mean, he's not a machine guy. He is literally an outsider, and this is an example where you can watch this person. I think he believes all this stuff, but I think that it's a really good example of how you convince yourself to believe things that maybe deep down you know aren't true, because when they're reinforced over and over and over again because they're advantageous to your career, you then sort of land at like, well, this has to be the way this
is. Has to be good.
Because otherwise I have to go back, like start from fucking zero again, you know? And that's really embodied in what a lot of comedians do with the economic like decisions we were making. Or the thing we were talking about earlier, economic decisions versus value decisions, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, Andrew Yang needs to quit comedy.
Long story short, but it is that feedback loop of like, you know, like we all have our own comedic voices, especially as we've been doing it for a long time. But like at the end of the day, if you think about it, every single joke is focus grouped. So like if you're listening too much to that focus group and you're not, you know, and you don't have any kind of value, you're going to end up saying racial slurs.
That's what's so crazy about how comedians will like claim like, you know, that the what's really for sale is their unique point of view and their soul and their individual like expertise and wisdom and stuff like that and sense of humor, because you really like commit like suicide on a level. Like you destroy yourself when you're like, well, what I don't like, what I think is funny isn't working, so I'm going to follow the fucking focus group. And it's like you're not an individual at all, you know?
Yeah. I just think about like when they made that like Twitter AI and it turned into a Nazi in like 6 hours. that's what happens if you do a lot of stand up and you don't have like a critical eye for your own values.
Totally.
Absolutely. No, that is 100%. And the moral of this episode, I think, unless anybody else has anything to say, let's wrap it up here, where I think we're long enough. Yeah,
let's do it.
Yeah, we're good.
Okay. Right. Kath, what do you want to plug? I know you're doing so many shows. Also, you should come back and talk to me about wrestling, because I know that you know it. And the only thing I know is like basically following your tweets. So I feel aware about what's going on. But I'm also very confused as to why so many comedians are into it. I got to know. So
I have theories.
We'll we got
to
do
it. Happy to talk to you about it.
But what do you want to plug? Tell us.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. This has been so much fun. I have two podcasts. One of them is called What a Time to Be Alive. It's a countdown show of five dumb news stories every week.
It rules. If you like this show, you will like What a Time.
It's very fun. It's very riffy. It's pretty light. We try to stay away from like heavy stuff. So it's a nice kind of diversion. And then my other podcast is called Lie, Cheat, and Steal, which is a true crime podcast about liars, frauds, thieves, and bullshitters. They both have Patreons, What a Time Pod and Lie, Cheat, and Steal A&D. They're both on Twitter. I'm Kath Barbadoro on Twitter. Like I said, I have some shows coming up in Austin in early May. I think that's all I have to plug. Thanks, guys.
Awesome. Thank you for coming. This was an awesome episode. I loved it very much. Jake, are you going to plug anything? What are you doing?
Yeah. Again, both of Kath's podcasts are excellent podcasts.
Oh, thank you.
Very good shit. Mm-hmm. Check out Lie, Cheat, and Steal. It's very fun. Scams. I enjoy it a lot.
Thanks.
And for me, I don't know, man. Like I said, if you listen to this week and you live in Austin, I might be there, but I don't know if I'm going to be on stage. Pod Damn America. Hanging. Listen to my Duncan Trussell episode if you're a podcast head. I'm very proud of it.
And tweet at Duncan Trussell and tell him that you love Jake so that, you know, he'll get on it more.
I think he asked me to come back. I shouldn't be saying this to Mike, but I'm trying to get him PSA pilled and shit.
That's what we do. We say stuff we shouldn't be saying on the all the time.
I don't jinx anything. I don't want to look dumb if I don't go back, but Yeah, I don't know. You know, you know who I am. I
all the links, all the links will be in the show description. I've got nothing. I will be starting a show. Maybe I got to look at this contract. We'll see, and then I'll post about it. You'll see. I don't have any plugs. Bye.
Bye.
It's finished. Oh, wrong podcast. Okay.